People have gathered around ideas since the beginning of time. Each successful collaboration pushing innovation forward, building a stronger future. Motorist Insurance Group and Brick Street Insurance have combined decades of experience to create an even better one-stop shop for agents and policyholders, encircling businesses and individuals with coverage at every step in life's journey. We are now Encova Insurance.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Attention. Do I have everybody's attention now?
Jacked up just thinking about this match, and I'm standing and pacing in my den.
He's just Mikazi now. He's not
okay,
kidding.
So he's not a kid anymore.
He's a boy. He's a man.
He's man Mikazi.
Are you ready?
He got PWS superstar Brian Bond. And he was gone in 2 minutes.
So it's Ingobernables.
Ingobernables. Ingobernables.
And Dustin Capone! Look at that! He's falling down! He's back! The man of a thousand holes!
You're missing a B there, but that's...
There's a B? This is what I'm talking about. These letters don't go together.
We got it from your world champion!
Oh, you're having a wank, are you? And it's like, no!
Mickey, Pishy, Pishy!
You are listening to the Voices of Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, Joe Lanza.
X out, go listen to some boring podcast where they're afraid of their own shadow. Okay? Don't listen to Joe Lanza, because Joe Lanza's not changing.
And Rich Cringe.
Who delivers this guy in a big spot?
Joe, don't yell at me.
In the big spot, who delivers better than this guy?
Stop yelling at me. I agree.
All right, welcome once again to the Voice Wrestling Podcast. I am Rich Cringe alongside, as always, the king of banter himself, Mr. Joe Lanza. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm great, Rich. How are you?
You can tell we're not like, we don't have a ton of topics, because now I asked again how you were doing, so... Like, prior, remember those past few weeks, I was like, don't care, Joe, we got to get going, but I guess we have a lot to do, but maybe this time I'm actually generally curious how you're doing.
I'm great, Rich. How are you?
You're taking in some Arch Madness, I hear.
I am taking in some Arch Madness, and you should be. These are local teams. This is
my Loyola Ramblers.
Your Loyola Chicago Ramblers.
I still remember that 1952 championship, man. Ugh, it's the best. Was that the year? I don't remember. It's 52. Let's find out what year.
Good times. Was that an NCAA championship or an NIT?
I don't know at that point.
That's when the NIT, you know, they were.
That was a thing, yeah.
They were both good tournaments, so that's no slight.
Yeah, the NCAA really rose to power in the late 50s because of the cheating scandal. The big, all the New York teams got into some big, you know, point shaving scandal. 1963, I forgot. Wow, 1963 NCAA champion Loyola Ramblers.
63. That's pretty.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Fairly recent for a small school like that to have accomplished that. But about to get knocked off in this first round of the Arch Madness to a 5-win Bradley team. and yeah, I've been watching this game intently as I wrap up New Japan Cup. And I had this on as my background noise. You know, I love the college hoops, Rich.
You do, yeah. This is your time.
And if I'm watching, Bradley versus Loyola Chicago, I must love the college hoops.
And you don't gamble anymore, right? On the hoops?
I don't gamble very often. Period. Anymore. I'm a big fan, Rich.
Is that what? Did you become a fan of like the mid-level college basketball from gambling, or were you actually always just sort of like?
I just,
because you'll watch anything. Like you will watch like San Diego State versus like
Watch it, Brantley versus Loyola.
You're scraping them out of the barrel there. But.
Encapsulates it. The winner takes on number one seed Wichita State and will be promptly, you know.
Oh, just decimated. Yeah, they're still awesome, right? I don't follow college hoops.
Yeah,
at all,
man, but. Van Fleet is still there, and you know they still have a good team. They're a tournament team no matter what happens.
Shockers, right? They're the Shockers, right? Yeah. They're good, fun little team. But do you watch like D2 and D3
stuff? No, D1.
So it's got to be D1. Okay. You have 119 D1, so.
Look, if it's D1, I watch it though. You know, what I'm really into, okay. What I can't wait for is the Big West tournament to start.
I mean, Chicago State and like.
No.
Oh, not that one.
That's the WAC. That's the WAC. That's a terrible conference. The WAC is very WAC rich. Nobody likes the WAC.
That's like New Jersey, like technology, and then like Chicago State.
NJIT is no longer in the WAC, but
oh no,
what happened? New Mexico State's been dominating the WAC with the Boulard brothers, okay, and Tanvir Boulard is still there, okay. Sim Boulard, that sack of shit. I think he's on the Raptors now, and
he's on their D League.
Right, and Tanvir is still on the. They've been wiping.
How is Tanvir still there?
He's still there. He's there. He's playing. He's not playing a lot of minutes, but he's there. But here's the thing, and for people who don't know, they're like 7'6" giants, and they both weigh like 400 pounds.
They're Indian, correct?
They're Indians. They're from Toronto. They're not from India, but they're of Indian descent, and they're from Toronto.
Yeah, Indian descent. There you go.
So they, you know, New Mexico.
Politically correct of you. Thank you.
That's right.
I appreciate.
Yeah, listen, Rich. I know what I'm talking about. So anyway, they've been dominating that conference, and I hate that coach because he knows he's in a weak conference, and he plays a terrible out of conference schedule. They go like 25-4 every year, and then they promptly and then they get killed in the first round of the NCAA tournament. So I hate them. Well, this year, Rich, they finally got some competition. Grand Canyon. You may not know. Now listen.
Isn't that an online? It's an online university, right?
I don't know what it is, but they just moved up to Division I like 2 years ago. They're actually in first place in the WAC this year. You know who their coach is, Rich? Don't look it up.
Oh man,
you're gonna like this, and you're
gonna be. I'll know him.
You will know him, and you'll be behind this team now to take down evil New Mexico State. Who?
Oh boy. Everyone should hate. Can you give me some hints?
My favorite NBA player of all time.
Oh shit. Thunder Dan?
Thunder Dan is the head coach of
I'm all good. Oh, hell yeah. I had no idea, really?
And wow. They're not only neck and neck with New Mexico State in the WAC, but they've got a pretty decent RPI to do. Marley's doing a nice job. They've only had a team for like 4 years.
So, now, what are they paying that guy to get off the couch to do that? Like, you know what I mean? Like
he was their first coach. When they were still, you know, because they came in like Division III or whatever. And then
the
plan all along was to move up to D1 at some point, and now they are, and he's having a tremendous year. They actually had a higher RPI than Georgetown at one point, which I found funny, because Georgetown's having a terrible year, but it's pretty embarrassing for Georgetown anyway. So yeah, the Antelopes, man. The Grand Canyon Lopes, watch out.
I'm all in.
Dan Marley, you got to be rooting for them in their tournament because, look, they're not getting in. It's a one-bid league, obviously. So, and the only team standing in their way is New Mexico State. But the Big West, Rich, has some
interesting. Utah Valley. What about Utah? It's the worst conference, man.
It's a terrible conference.
Wasn't it like – it wasn't less than like 10 years ago where the WAC was like a pretty good conference, right?
Yeah, but now like everyone's gone. They're all
right, exactly. Like who was there? Like I'm trying to remember because I know like Boise was there, right? They were one of the – Boise State was one of the big things, and then they had a bunch of other –
The WAC was actually a really fun football conference years ago.
Well, because like Hawaii was in there too, right?
BYU and all those.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So all the
high scoring games.
Yeah,
you know, but the WAC completely turned over their team. You know, a lot of those teams left for the Mountain West, and then the WAC just replaced them all with. Read off some of these schools. A lot of
yeah. So this is the Western Athletic Conference, by the way. California State, Bakersville, Chicago State, of course. Nothing's more west than Chicago. Grand Valley or Grand Canyon University, the aforementioned. University of Missouri, Kansas City, again, very west. New Mexico State. Seattle University. University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley, sorry. And then Utah Valley. Lovely Utah Valley.
So you can
see. They have an endowment of $48 million, Utah Valley. Jesus.
You can see.
That's really low. Like, that's. Bad. Like, how did you, man? All right.
You can see why New Mexico State was dominating this league and being bullies and playing a week out of conference schedule. That's why I hate the coach. Can't stand him. Can't remember his last name. I think it's Moonves or something like that. But he's I can't stand the guy. So I'm glad Dan Marley gave him a push. This Big West. Let me tell you what's going on in the Big West, though, Rich. I'm real excited about the Big West tournament. You got Hawaii, who right now is about 24-3. They're having a great year. But here's the thing about Hawaii: they go on probation next year. So it's this year or nothing for Hawaii.
What'd they do?
It's a good story. The previous coach was an absolute disaster, just doing all kinds of shady business. So they're having a big year, but this is their only chance. Okay. But here's the thing: they're being challenged by Cal State Irvine. Now you might be saying, so what? You might remember last year, they've got that 7'7" African center, and they they almost beat Louisville in the first round of the tournament last year. So those two teams have been going next.
Has he gotten better? Because he was all like skin and bones last year.
No,
like, he was just kind of all over the place.
Good.
Okay.
He's a defensive force. Okay. I think he's going to the NBA. I don't know if he's going to be any good in the NBA, but I think he's going to the NBA. It would have been better off for him if it was 20 years ago, but he's going to the NBA. And he's coming. He's got another year of eligibility too, this kid at Cal State Irvine. So you got that team with the big African. Got Long Beach State, who's always dangerous. That's going to be a fun tournament, too. That one starts on Monday. So can't wait for the Big West. I'm all into the college basketball, Rich.
Is Michael Olowokandi coaching at Pacific now? Because that will be my second favorite team in the NCAA tournament.
I don't know who the Pacific head coach is. but
hopefully it's the Candyman for Lucky.
I highly doubt it.
Oh, okay.
The Candyman, Brad Armstrong?
No, the other. Not that Candyman, Pacific's not in the Big West anymore. I apologize. They used to be. Sorry.
They're in the
false alarm.
They're in the they're in Gonzaga's league, right? What's the name of that league? West Coast Conference, right?
Oh, okay.
Gonzaga,
I have no idea.
BYU, St. Mary's.
My college basketball fandom stopped in like 2005, and that's basically about all I know. I pick it up at the tournament. I'll watch some stuff, but yeah, I don't really get too much into it. But we got plenty of stuff to get to in the wrestling world. Are you done? I don't want to get away from your college basketball unless you're done.
Well, Rich, you asked me to stall for 15 minutes because we don't have a lot to talk about. So I think
I don't know if I asked you for that.
I think we accomplished that.
I wanted a few minutes of playful banter, but we went on and had a very good conversation about Thunder Dan Marley. So I'm happy about that. But the news of today, I think you and I both, I mean, I watched a little bit earlier and reviewed it for the website. You just finished this before we recorded, and you mentioned you were watching, you know, some loyal Ramblers while you were finishing up. But the New Japan Cup, day one kicked off today. Overall, I thought it was a fantastic show. I thought it was really, really good. I put in my review that it's sort of the New Japan Cup doesn't get a lot of respect, and sometimes you do get, you know, these shows that are just kind of okay, and they're this to the this one was this could have been a G1 show, and I wouldn't have known the difference.
Yeah, this was a G1 quality show. This was an excellent show. You can't skip this show. Not only that, you can't skip anything that was on the show.
No, I think it was very newsworthy. I think it might be best to talk, it sort of go chronologically through this, because I think it's still fresh in people's minds. But the beginning of the show, I think, was probably the most newsworthy, of course, where Kidani, who had mentioned a few days ago, this is Bushiroad president, Kidani had mentioned a few days ago that he had some three announcements, and everybody was speculating, you know, what are these three announcements? What's he going to say? What's he going to do or whatever? We come to find out the first two announcements were contracts. Michael Elgin receives a two-year contract to stick with New Japan, which is great for him. He essentially takes over the Carl Anderson role as like the Gaijin ace sort of guy, and that's good. That's perfect for him. And we found out later in the night that this guy he fits New Japan like a glove, and we knew that he was going to fit well. And it's just amazing. I wrote in the review as well, just the transformation that he made. Like think of Michael Elgin last year in June to where he is today. It's just insane how well this guy has just turned his whole career, turned his psyche, turned his fan base. Like everything is so different from June till, you know, now March. For this guy's career, and it's now he said in the promo that he cut too, he's reached one of his dreams, and that was to be in New Japan. So that's awesome. Glad for him. He looks so happy too.
Well, the thing about that move is, look, he had feelers from WWE. He could have tried out for WWE. I don't know if he ever made it to a tryout, but he had opportunities to try out. He had invitations to try out.
Yeah.
But I think that at this point in his life, New Japan 2-year deal works for him. He's got a new baby at home. You know, so he can be home a lot in between the tours, as opposed to where if you go to WWE, if you get called up, you know, then you're on the road all the time and you're home, what, like, you know, a day or two a week or whatever it is.
Right.
So maybe, you know, he's just enjoying his life right now. And he's obviously a guy who's always wanted to work New Japan. That's not him. You know, that's not a work. He's being, he's shooting when he says that he's always wanted. Yeah, he's always, look the last couple of years, everyone was making fun of him. because it was, you know, it was so obvious he wanted to work in New Japan, they wouldn't book him. He's always wanted to work there. So I think this is a good move for him with the 2-year deal for New Japan. I think this is what he wants right now in life anyway. So this is good all around. It's good for both sides.
Absolutely. The second announcement was Katsuyori Shibata is once again a contracted employee of New Japan, and he signed a 1-year deal. So good for him. And now we sort of – there was – and I think you and I even mentioned this a few weeks ago, that there was something we saw from the booking, that they were finally putting confidence in this guy. They obviously gave him the Never Open Weight title. We knew that it was only a matter of time before he was going to put pen to paper and become a contracted employee, because he was, you know, quote, freelance, even though he was only working New Japan forever. But they let bygones be bygones, the past, whatever. Now he's signed. He's back in the fold. So great news for him, and great news for us too, because we're going to now finally see them go all out with him and really do, because they know now there's a sense of to get the contract, he's ready to go, he's not going anywhere, he's not bouncing that we know of. So it's good to know, and it's gonna be good for us, because I think he's a fantastic worker, and it's just I think now it opens up a bunch for him that he can do.
And here's the thing about that, it's like you said, the booking has been telling. We kind of knew something was cooking because they finally put a title on him, a singles title, and he's being booked strong. And the thing is, you know, just a good example to look at is, look, these companies, a good example, look at Nakajima. You know, Noah wouldn't go all the way with him or do anything with him until he put his name to paper too. That matters. Even though Shibata wasn't working anywhere else, if you don't have that name on the paper, if you're not an official member of the roster, these companies are hesitant to go all the way with you, and understandably so. So, yeah, that's a big one too. The other big thing about this is you can see the ripple effects of WWE. Basically, they'll raid anyone. Anyone who's decent on the planet is in danger of being signed by this company. So you can see those ripple effects being felt. When has New Japan ever made this big a deal out of signing guys to contracts? It was always very quietly done every January, the 1-year recurring deals, but they're going out there front and center announcing these deals before shows.
Well, and literally having the guy signing. Like that's the thing too. It wasn't just like, you know, they put up his picture on the thing and said, hey, we signed him to a deal. Like, they had the guys come out. They had the contract on a piece of paper, and they, you know what I mean? Like, it wrote it right there and signed it and did it a very, very sort of, there was a ceremony to it where, yeah, that we never knew that before. It was just, you know, they auto-renewed everybody's contract at the end. Okay, whatever. They were making it very known. Hey, this guy is now ours. So just so you know.
Right.
Here's the contract, and he's signing it. Okay. Don't touch it. Like,
they obviously took the two major hits with Styles and Nakamura. That woke them up. You know, but when you really look at it, they've won a lot of the smaller battles, though, because the guys like Fale and Tonga and Rocky Romero, they all had WWE deals either on the table or they had at least, you know, touched base with WWE. Those guys decided to stay. Elgin had various opportunities on the table, including trying out for WWE, and he decided to sign with New Japan. They finally got Shibata under a deal, so it's just very telling that they're like, you know, they're just making sure everyone knows that they've won a few and that they've gotten some of these guys under deals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot of the optics of, hey, we're not getting raided. There's a lot of these guys are still signing up. A lot of these guys are sticking with us. So, yeah, it's very much an optics thing, and that's why this was such a big announcement before the show. And then the last announcement, one that I know you're pumped about, I'm pumped about, and everybody was going nuts about, the Super J Cup is coming back.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not be excited about it, especially when they flashed up on the screen that collection of promotions that are going to be involved? Look, you would expect Ring of Honor, you would expect CMLL, and those are great promotions. I think what no one expected to see was Dragon Gate.
No. Yeah, that's...
And that's a huge one. You know, Dragon Gate kind of minds their own business. They stay in their own lane. They'll bring in a freelancer every now and then. Years ago, they would work with Noah. They would work with Ring of Honor. They even worked with New Japan a little bit, and that didn't end so amicably. But now, you know, this is really – that was the big surprise on the board. 0-1 was kind of a surprise too. I got to be honest, I wasn't expecting to see 0-1 up on that screen.
No, yeah, there's a lot of background there that I didn't expect 0-1 either. But
you know, I you know, Noah
Rikuyu Dragon Pro Wrestling. What about that? Did that shock you to the core?
Well, that didn't surprise me because they've booked some of those. No, they booked a couple of those guys last year, and I don't think they worked with them at all last year. But I'm sorry, in 2014 they booked a couple of those guys once or twice.
That Taiwan show, right?
I think it was a charity show in not in Taiwan. It was a charity show in some village somewhere and they worked with those
guys. Oh, that's that one. Okay. I remember that one. There was a weird Taiwan show, too. I forgot who they brought in for that one, but I know the one you're talking about now.
Yeah, they ran Taiwan, but that was just – those were just straight New Japan shows. But, yeah, so that's the group that I'm talking about, though. So there were already ties there. And look, the thing about that is there'll be a guy or two from that promotion that'll come in and be in this tournament, and they'll come in as unknowns. But you'll get it'll be someone fresh, and it'll be someone undiscovered for the most part. And that's what's cool about this. And I think what people have to kind of – look, I don't know what this is going to be. They might go all out and load this thing up with stars for all I know. But, you know, Super J Cups in the past have always been about – exposing younger talent to the masses more so than – look, there were stars too. You have to draw a crowd. But the emphasis was always on – look, you had Rey Mysterio Jr. and Psychosis that one year. They weren't in the tournament, but they had their traveling match on a Super J Cup, which sort of exposed them to Japan and exposed them to more eyes. I think that was either in 94 or 95, probably 95. Or it might have been 96, either 95 or 96.
95.
It was 95, yeah. And it's always been, especially, you know, look, I think Masaki Mochizuki was in a Super J Cup.
He was, 95, same one.
Yeah, 95, same so one. Just to give some examples. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, other guys. Yeah, no, yeah, a bunch of other guys, too, 2000, because I have that, you know, DVD comp that I got from Rudo Reels. RudoReels.com, and it's a Super J Cup comp, and it's awesome. I've watched it a bunch of times, just going through, because it is. It's a lot of guys that you see. Like the 2001 is one that I remember. You have Shima there, and he's like super. He's like 140 pounds. He's just this little child. You know what I mean? And like you forget that Shima was a child at some point. But you got him. I think Kasayashi is on that one. I think he's pretty young then. Shinya Makabe, of course. I forgot. Like, I swear, I watched three matches of that guy, and I'm like, that guy looks really familiar. I don't know who that is. And I was like, Makabe. Oh, that's Togi. Like, because he's got, like, he does, I mean, he's skinny. He's a little child. He's like 18 years old. He's got black hair, you know. I mean, every Togi Makabe I've seen has been chained, big, beefy, screamer. And this is, like, junior Makabe. And it's just like, it's insane. But yeah, that's 2000. I know 2004, you had.
Let's do this. Let's go through them all. I mean, quickly.
Okay, all right.
Look at 94, and yeah, you had Jushin Liger, El Samurai. Those were the big stars at the time. But, you know, look who they filled it out with. You know, a young Taka Michinoku. I remember, this is 1994. So, you know, these guys are veterans now, but these were, you know, you had Taka Michinoku, you had Eddie Guerrero's Black Tiger, you had Dean Malenko. And this was the first exposure for a lot of these guys on a worldwide basis that really put a lot of attention on them. Negro Casas, Ricky Fuji, Hayabusa, who faced Liger in the first round. So, and then you move on to the next year, 95. This is the one that a lot of people remember. Gato made the finals this year. I don't know if you remember 95. Gato made the finals, which was kind of surprising to a lot of people. But that's where you had Chris Jericho and Damian 666. Yeah. And Ultimo Dragon was in that one and advanced pretty far.
Naniwa as well. Grand Naniwa was in there as well.
Grand Naniwa, that's the Masaki Mochizuki year when he was a young wrestler. Then they skipped a few years, and you were just talking about 2000 with Shima and Ricky Marvin and Curry Man. And who else was in that? I think Suwa. Suwa was in
there. Yeah, Hayashi was in there. Suwa was in there as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then you had your veterans too. You had Grand Hamada. Jushin Liger, obviously, is always a staple. By that point in time, Thunder Mask, the current Tiger Mask was probably around.
Ricky Marvin was in there too.
Yeah, Ricky Marvin. Yeah,
He was still a baby too.
Yeah. So, and like you said, Togi Makabe is a junior. You know?
it's shocking to see Togi Makabe as a junior in 2000. It's just it's unbelievable.
And then they did a much smaller tournament in 2004 because that was the Osaka Pro year.
Yeah.
And the veteran star in that one was Mara Fuji, and then it was a bunch of younger Wataru Inoue was there too. I guess he was a veteran at that point in time. But, you know, there's a lot of younger wrestlers in that one. And then 2009, I think that was another New Japan year. And that one.
Yeah, but you have Devitt, Kotobushi, who still at that point was still kind of growing, Yamato from Dragon Gate, Taguchi. So there's a bunch of fun ones. Taichi was still very young at that point. So yeah, it's like we're not talking about like heavy hitters. And I think that's the point you're trying to make is that people are like, oh, what about like this guy and why isn't that guy going to be in it? And like this promotion's not representing it. And it's like, okay, you're like, yeah, but it's not supposed to be a don't think of it necessarily as a best of the super juniors or whatever. Think of it more as a, it's a showcase. It's just kind of a fun little showcase. So there might be people, like you said, that you don't know, that you've never heard of, that you're like, oh my God, X is way better than this guy. Why is he not in it? And it's not really, you look at the history of it and there's, that's the fun part of it, is discovering these new guys. These guys come out first round, you have no idea who they are, and then you learn who they are throughout the tournament. That's
and,
the point.
And a lot of the guys we just named fit that description at the time. They all became stars.
Right, yeah. Right now you're rolling your eyes, oh my God. Well, but yeah, Prince Devitt in 1999 or 2009 or whatever, and Kotobushi in 2009, they were still babies. I mean, Obushi had wrestled, obviously, for quite a few years, but had really starting to gain steam around this time. You know, there's plenty of names that you can go through the list. Dino, Denshiko Dino was in that one.
Yeah, so I mean, now look, I don't know if they're going to use this as... Here's the other thing, too. Politically, a lot of these promotions, you know, they're going to send their babies or their lower tier guys or their rookies because they're going to lose. So you don't necessarily want to send your stars to something like this. So there's a lot of politics in play too. But again, this is, you know, we don't know how this is going to be handled. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. It might be an all-star lineup. They might change course. I mean, this is not something that's done yearly, as they take big gaps in this. Different promotions.
Yeah, 2009 was the last one, of course, that we just mentioned. So
yeah, and different promotions have hosted it at different times, obviously. So maybe it will be a total all-star lineup. I don't know. I'm just saying historically, it's been peppered with some stars to put fans in the seats, and then there's been younger wrestler, but the lineups are always tremendous. I mean, I think with the exception of probably 2004, the Osaka Pro year, which was a pretty weak lineup, the other years, the lineups always turn out to be tremendous. So it should be a lot of fun. It'll be fun to speculate, you know, who's going to send who, what promotions are going to send which wrestlers to this thing. So, you know, it has the potential. Look, either way, I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and this is now. Look, anyone who wants to push the cruiserweights between this and the NXT thing,
the golden age.
This is your year, okay? They're going to be pushing the cruiserweights on both ends of the planet here this summer.
Absolutely, and of course, you mentioned the summer. It's going to happen August 21st. That'll be when the G1 wraps up, so all the heavyweights need their little break time. So this will be their chance, the juniors, to get in there and do some work. So it'll be really cool. Yeah, so August is going to be busy, real, real busy, but I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Now we'll go to the New Japan Cup, because that was the end of the three announcements. One other thing, actually, here, real quick, I'll do another announcement, and then we'll jump into the card. But during the card, Okada won the tag match earlier. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. Pointed to the screen, and it was Will Ospreay. People know him. European wrestling fans will know him, and people from PWG fans and all those people that have sort of hardcore fans know who Will Ospreay is. If you don't, I put a music video in the review that I wrote if you want to see sort of what he's capable of and what he does. He's a fantastic worker. He's awesome. Go seek out his stuff. I even said, hey, go to our match of the year, because there's plenty of... I mean, he's in there a bunch of times in our match of the year. Shows up, you know, in numerous promotions as well. Just had a fantastic year. So he announced that he is a new member of Chaos and immediately says, I'm going to challenge Kushida for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. So that is really awesome, too. New member of the roster, Will Ospreay. That's a heavy hitter right there. People are going to be shocked by how good he is. I think if people haven't really dove into him yet or haven't really seen a lot of him yet, he just grabs attention one way or another. You know what I mean? Like you can't take your eyes off him when he's in the ring.
If you haven't seen him yet, I don't know what you're doing. You're lost. I mean, you know, it's too late in the game to say, I don't know anything about Will Ospreay. Go do your homework and go watch some Will Ospreay. There's no excuse for that at this point. Whether it's, Rev Pro or PWG or whatever, go find this
Progress,
stuff.
Progress Wrestling. Yeah, I mean, there's free matches everywhere, too. Type his name into YouTube. You'll find plenty of stuff. Trust me.
And, you know, he's like 22 years old. I don't even think he turned 23 yet. And he's going to be a very major player for the next decade and a half to two decades in the world of wrestling. There's no question. And he signed a deal with New Japan. We all knew he was going to start an Invasion Attack. For some reason, people were speculating that he might be a young lion. I didn't think that was going to be the case. And that's completely the opposite case. He's jumping right into a title match. So, and I think he's going to beat Kushida. So, and this is what I feared for Kushida. There's just too many new toys to play with in that division. I mean, and Kushida's time is going to be cut short. There's just too much going on. So,
yeah, you got Bushi, you got Will Ospreay. I mean, that thing's getting loaded
Ricochet,
up right now.
Matt Sydal. I mean, they got all these exciting new juniors, and you know, it's I don't think Kushida is going to survive this. you know, as the junior ace that people thought he would be during this period of time. I just don't think it's going to happen. He's gonna either lose it to Ospreay. He's not gonna beat all these people. So, and I think he's losing this match. I think they're gonna put Ospreay over big. I think they love him, and they're gonna make sure that he wins his first match right out of the gate. But yeah, he's tremendous. He's great. He's just he's already a world class wrestler at the age of 22, and this is going to be a big deal. And hopefully, the juniors between this and the with all these signings they've made. And the elevation of Bushi and the Super J Cup, that the juniors could get a little more focused this year.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Move on now to the first round matchups of the New Japan Cup. The opener, Toru Yano defeating Yujiro Takahashi. This I didn't give a rating to because it was Yano, you know, Yujiro attacks Yano on the outside. They fight on the outside, da 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 da, whatever. The count's at 19. Yano slips through, knocks Yujiro down, rolls into the ring, and he wins. So that's it. I thought it was fine. It was fun. A good way to open the show. Everybody was laughing, and the crowd always pops for Yano's antics. So what? I mean, you can't be upset by it.
It was a lot of fun. It was a crafty.
It's Toru Yano Yujiro. What the fuck did you
want? It's a crafty count out win. Did anybody want to see a 10-minute match between these two?
God, no. So give us time for all the other matches, which got a bunch of time. And thankfully, because this match only went a minute, everybody else got a few more minutes to do what they needed to do, which was fantastic in many cases. So
yeah, this was perfect booking for this match.
Yep. Agreed. Move on now. Michael Elgin defeating Hiroshi Tenzan. What did you think of this match?
I thought it was way better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, that was Tenzan. We always talk about that, and I think it was on Slack. I was talking to you on our internal Slack, and I said, oh man, Tenzan and Big Mike, you know, had a great match, and I think you alluded to, you know, Tenzan every so often, or like once or twice a year now, he'll just out of nowhere just say, oh, you know what, I'm gonna have a really good match, and then he kills it. Like last year, I think you said it was the Rob Conway match that was fantastic. What month was that one? I forgot which.
It was earlier, and it was in the first half of the year of the conference.
Was it February? It wasn't February. I forgot when it was, but yeah, I remember the match exactly you were talking about. It was just like, holy shit, Rob Conway and Tenzan had a really awesome match, and you had to like tell people, no, I promise, like they had a good. And this is one that again you might see and go, ah, Michael Elgin, Tenzan, it's awesome. It's really, really good. Tenzan gave his body. I mean, he gave Michael Elgin a lot in this match. And you talk about Tenzan, who's a New Japan legend. We know him as, you know, he's kind of this older guy. He's kind of run down now, but that's still a guy that's fairly protected. They still take some decent care of him, but they let Michael Elgin do a lot with him, and Tenzan let Michael Elgin do a lot as well. I thought that was real telling in that this is a newly signed guy, Michael Elgin, that this felt like, okay, this is a man who's on this roster. He's ready to go. And here he is just destroying. I mean, and Tenzan had a bunch of hope spots as well, and it was fun at the end as well. But I think the first half of the match was all Elgin. It was a showcase, and the crowd's chanting for Elgin. They're doing all this stuff. I mean, that right there shows you all you need to know about what Michael Elgin's going to do this year and next year in New Japan. I mean, they think the world of this guy. I mean, this isn't some guy that's just filling out the bottom of the cards anymore. I mean, this is a real deal guy now.
I mean, yeah, Elgin can win the tournament. So
yeah, oh yeah.
So you know, he's definitely in line for a push here. They gave him the new contract. You could see that he's motivated, and I think you nailed it on the head. I was very surprised. He took 80% of this match, and you know, Tenzan barely got anything in. And then that you know, I was starting to think to myself, wow, is Tenzan going to win? Because you know what I mean? Because usually when you give up that much, especially when you're a veteran like that, a respected veteran, but then Elgin won the match. He hit him with the sit-out powerbomb, and that was that.
Because there was at one point where Tenzan locked him in that Anaconda Vice, and like it was sort of the middle of the ring, and I'm like, all right, there we go. There, you know, that was it. Elgin had a fun little run.
Right, yeah.
Right, there we go. Okay, had a nice little run. Then Elgin got to the ropes. I went, oh, okay. And then they just started, you know, it was lariating each other. Tenzan went for the moonsault. I said, okay, he's going to win with the moonsault. And then the buckle bomb. And I was like, oh, never mind that. Okay. Like, that's it. But yeah, I was shocked by the quality of the match and shocked by how much Elgin was given in this match as well. But
let me tell you.
A good shot. A good shock, though.
The way that match was laid out and as definitively as he won it, that's as strong a win as he's had. I mean.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, people are going to laugh, Tenzan, but Tenzan has respect. You know, that was, and the way he dominated him, that was a very strong win. He could win this tournament.
I liked after the match, too. I thought it was kind of fun. Elgin was ready to give him a handshake, and Tenzan just said, ah, fuck you, and left the ring.
Like, I didn't even notice that. That's nice.
Oh, yeah. Like Elgin took his, like, you know, he's putting his straps down and kind of, like, he was about to go for a handshake, and Tenzan just rolled out of the ring and then, like, kind of gave him, like, with his hand and walked to the side, like, ah, fuck
you. He gave him the hand wave? Did he give him the hand?
Sort of. It wasn't like an extreme hand wave, but it was kind of just like, you know what I mean?
Like, I like a good hand.
I'm too old for this shit. Yeah.
I enjoy a good hand wave. Hopefully he gave him the hand. I'm going to have to go back and look for that.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a full hand wave, but it was definitely a dismissal in some way. Cold shoulder, is at least what I saw. But move on to the next match, Tama Tonga versus Togi Makabe. And you previewed earlier today on Twitter, said you have a lot to talk about about Tama Tonga, so I'll let you have it.
Okay, so a lot of people were surprised he won the match, and I wasn't. And that's
I wasn't.
And listen, that's big talk from someone who didn't fill out a bracket pool, okay, and with hindsight and all that. But
it was over 64% of our pick'em participants had Tonga winning. So
well, there you go. And I mean,
they were smart. So
if you look at everything from from January 3rd onward, it's very fucking obvious that they're going to push this guy. He gives the promo on January 3rd, the day before the Dome. Everyone remembers that promo where he basically just laid down the gauntlet, said he was tired of not being featured and whatnot. Then he wins the Trios titles, which I insisted a few weeks ago when it happened. Look, I know it was only a 4-day reign, and I know that a lot of people are just viewing that as, it's the never title. It's just a throwaway thing. It was just a dumb thing to keep people busy. I completely disagree. I really think when that Bullet Club team won those never openweight trios titles, that was meant to help progress Tama Tonga. If you recall, when they won that match, all of the camera focus was on Tonga, and they focused on him after the match. They focused on him relishing winning that title. And yes, those titles aren't that big of a deal, but they are a big deal for a guy like Tama Tonga, who they haven't done anything with since 2010. Okay, they've done nothing with this guy.
And that's not an exaggeration. Like, go look at it. Go look at his cage match since 2010. It's literally nothing. You're right.
They've done nothing with the guy. I mean, that title win it meant nothing for Fale and Yujiro, but it meant something for the progression of Tama Tonga. Go back and watch that match and see how it's produced. How the post match that's produced. All the focus is on Tonga, and I don't know what the announcers were saying, but I'm sure that they were talking about Tama Tonga finally winning the title. And yes, they lost it back a couple days later because they had to get it back to the Briscoe Yano team to then get it to the Elite. But that little title switch there was not insignificant for Tama Tonga. Consider this. Since 2014, he's had 5 singles matches before this match in the New Japan Cup against Makabe. 5 singles matches since 2014. He had 1 singles match the entire year last year. 1. He lost to Kazuchika Okada on a random house show on Road to Dominion. That was his only singles match the entire year last year. And actually, my other stat was wrong. He only had 4 singles matches coming into this match today since 2014. He had 3 singles matches in 2014, and he had 1 match in 2015. And previous to this New Japan Cup, the last time he was in New Japan Cup was 2013. He lost to Hirooki Goto in the first round. And by the way, that was his only singles match the entire year. So when I say that they've literally done nothing with this guy, I mean that they've literally have not done a thing with Tama Tonga. So things like winning the never openweight trios and being booked in the New Japan Cup is major progress for this guy. But I feel like all of these things have added up to this, and I knew he was going to win this match. Who does he have next in this tournament?
He will go up against, let me find, I just closed the window actually, because I was like, I don't need that. Should know off the top of my head, I've been looking at this thing enough. 1 sec, this is awful, I should know this.
I haven't even looked at how the bracket.
Oh, he'll fight Goto next.
Listen.
He could be Goto.
That's winnable.
Yeah.
The story that they're telling with Goto. Now, I think that they've kind of switched paths with Goto here after they did that bizarre video in the rain or whatever, in the waterfall. So we all thought he was going to lose in the first round, but I would put the odds on that one 75-25 in favor of Goto with Tonga here. But look, winning a New Japan Cup first round match over Togi Makabe. We just talked about Elgin getting a strong win. Beating Togi Makabe in 7 minutes is a very strong win for Tama Tonga. A very strong win, because Makabe is another guy. You know, if you're, especially now with the defections, he's like 4th or 5th in the pecking order in terms of the stars of this company. In their eyes. Okay, maybe we don't like seeing him wrestle all the time, but this guy's a star. That's a big win for Tama Tonga. I will say this. I wasn't in love with his performance in the match. So
the match was just kind of there.
It was probably, it was probably my least favorite match of the tournament, because at least the Yano-Yujiro match was fun. This was just there. This was a match.
Yeah, yeah, I gave it 2.25. It's just, yeah, there was nothing that happened until the last little stretch where Makabe did the King Kong knee drop and missed it, and then Tonga sort of went from there. He did the gun stun, which was pretty cool, you know, the ode to Carl Anderson. But then after that, it was just kind of whatever. He hit the jumping underhook DDT, his finisher, and then it was over. But yeah, a lot of this was just filler and didn't really do much. And I don't know if that's on Makabe. I don't know if that's on Tonga, because usually Tonga, I think, is a pretty good worker and usually does pretty well. But he benefits from being in the ring with someone that's really good as well. Like, not to say that he's not good, but he ends up, I think, stepping up a lot more. Like, we talk about Okada in those matches in the past, or even like tags when he comes in there against guys like a Tanahashi, even a Nakamura in the past. He tends to rise to that occasion. I don't know if he was really going to get much out of Makabe, but still, yeah, I'm with you. I think this was probably my least favorite of the New Japan Cup matches.
This was his most important match ever in this company. Most important singles match he's ever had. You could argue it's the most important match he's ever had in this company. And he pretty much laid an egg performance-wise. So I'd really like to see him go out against Goto and have a killer match. And with Goto, there's no excuses. You should have a killer match with Goto. Goto has killer matches. So I think, look, it's very clear they're pushing him. It's very clear. Look, and the other thing is that I haven't even mentioned, he's got this mystery partner coming in. He's challenging for the tag titles. So that's another reason why, you know, and probably why 64% of the people picked him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's another reason too, because I mean, he's challenging for the belts. He had to beat Mach. He looked like a goof if he lost, you know, so that was another reason. So, you know, I'd like to see him out. He needs to come out against Goto now and have a big performance in the ring.
The match you were most looking forward to, and one that delivered. So, I mean, I think I put in the review that there was a 0% chance this wasn't going to be really good, and ended up being really, 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 really good. You know what I mean? Like, we knew it was going to be solid. Like, there was no way it wasn't going to be at least solid, but I think it even outperformed those expectations. That's Satoshi Kojima defeating Tomoaki Hanma. I love this match. What'd you think of
this? This was better than the G1 match they had a couple years ago that kind of got buried on the show that it was on and didn't get a ton of time. This was exactly the kind of match that I thought these two guys could have, and I loved it. I thought it was a 4-star match. I thought Kojima when Kojima is put in a position to have a big-time match, he goes out there and has a big-time match, whether it's here, whether it's in NOAH, if he's in the Global League or whatever. When he's in position to have a big-time match, he does. And Hanma always delivers. I love the spot where he went for the cozy lariat, and Hanma, you know, he countered it with a flying headbutt. I mean, it's you know, pure craziness. I love the spot where they teased the count out, but they were teasing the count out doing the Fry Takayama spot with the dueling forearms right to the knife, because that was different. That was a little different twist on that. So yeah, this was an excellent match. I'm glad it delivered. I'm glad Kojima finally – look, Hanma gets a chance to shine all the time. I'm glad Kojima finally had a chance to shine. I'll tell you something else about Hanma. Now that Hanma's getting pushed – and now that Hanma is no longer a jobber, now that he's firmly a mid-card guy, maybe even a little higher because he holds a belt now, there's actually more drama in these matches now, because it's not a given that he's going to lose. Do you find absolutely. That? Like, now?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, a lot of people said that. And like, we weren't really quite sure. We were kind of on the fence about what was going to happen, but a lot of people said that. Yeah, I was always worried that once he became a mid-carder, that sort of shine would be off and it would just kind of be, this is just a guy now. But people are still invested in that character. I think they've built up enough equity with him of being that loser for so long that they're invested in his wins and losses. But now you at least have that caveat, like you said, that, oh, he might win this. That's kind of cool. Whereas before it was just sort of the, you know, let's root behind him. Incorrectly thought that once that shine was off, it would just kind of be, he's just a guy, but it's not. It's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with the slotting system in New Japan, you can kind of predict a lot of these matches fairly accurately. But the thing with Hanma is he could really lose. You know, he can't beat any. There's certain guys he's not going to beat. But with the exception of those upper echelon guys, he could beat or lose to anyone. So
he's got a title now, man. I mean, it's kind of surreal to see that guy just walk out with a title. I forget all the time, like, oh, shit, yeah, right, like, that guy's a champion now. Like, that's incredible. But yeah, I love this match. I even put, the people will probably get mad about it. Oh, no, come on, that wasn't as good. But I had the feeling watching this that it felt like, and it's not, I'm not saying it's like these matches or it's exactly the same or directly comparable, but it felt like a peak 90s All Japan match. You know what I mean? These guys just throwing bombs, throwing counters, hard lariats, you know, hard headbutts, the crowd going nuts the entire time. I got that feel the entire time with this match. It was just like that 11-minute, it could have been like, you know, like a Hansen versus whoever. You know what I mean? It just had that feel to me because it was just so intense from the beginning to the end, and it didn't feel like, you know, sometimes matches where they're always just doing stuff constantly can feel sort of rushed, and nothing felt rushed here. It just felt like both guys just wanted to get this win so bad and didn't want to let the other guy have a minute to sort of think of something or strategize or whatever. They just went balls to the wall the entire time, and that was awesome. I love that.
I love when Kojima works with an edge. You know, he worked with an edge against Nagata in that G1 match that I will not shut up about, and he kind of worked with an edge here. He had Hanma in a reverse chin lock at one point. And Hanma was screaming, you know, Hanma, tremendous, you know, how he sells. He was just screaming in this reverse chin lock. And the way Kojima just taught, when he got bored with the hold, the way he just tossed Hanma away with absolute disgust. You know, it's little touches like that. That was nothing more than a 45-second rest hold for those guys to catch their breath. But both of those guys did little things that made it compelling.
Absolutely.
Instead of just grabbing the hold, Hanma sold it like he was being suffocated, and Kojima just with disgust just tossed him away like this guy's beneath me, like he was disgusted with him. And that is the mark of two true pros. That could have been a throwaway 45 seconds of that match, and it ended up being just as compelling as the rest of the match.
Yeah, my favorite spot was Kojima went for a lariat with the right hand. Hanma blocked it, and he just Kojima just turned around with his left and just fucking took his head off. Just like, okay, fine, here. Like, and Hanma just sells it so well as well, and the crowd just gasped. And that was kind of one of the big turning points of the entire thing. But yeah, this is fantastic. I really, really love this one. Move on to a tag match, kind of a no out of canon for the New Japan Cup, but that's all right, because it was a lot of fun as well. It was Kazuchika Okada and Sakuraba defeating Shibata and Kushida.
Yeah, this was a fun match. It was mostly a setup to introduce Ospreay on the monitor after the match, after Okada dispatched of Kushida with the Rainmaker and pinned him in the center there. Then he introduced Ospreay. Here's the one thing I'm unsure of, though. I don't know how he's going to fit in as a member of Chaos.
Yeah, that seems like an odd fit, but...
And I think the way they did it, the camera started at his feet and then scanned up. You think people thought that was Zack Sabre Jr. for a minute? Because they kind of gasped at first, and then they kind of got real quiet, because when they showed his face, there was no reaction. Then when he said his name, some people gasped again. You know what I mean? So I feel like they didn't know who he was, which most of them probably didn't.
I don't think they knew who he was. I don't know if they thought he was Zack Sabre or they thought who he – I think they just were like, I don't know who this guy is. And then he took his head off and went, or his hood off, and I think they just said, I still don't know who he is. And I said, I'm Will Ospreay. Oh, okay. Now I know who you are. But, yeah, I don't know if they thought he was anybody. I just don't think they knew who he was in general. But, okay, and then any thoughts about the tag match? I thought it was fine. I liked the Shibata-Okada sort of their little battle that they had, a little mini battle. Sakuraba-Kushida, I kind of enjoyed that as well. And then there was some fun little, you know, Shibata-Sakuraba stuff. But it was a harmless little fun match. There's really nothing to take from it or glean from it. It was just kind of there. It was a vehicle, like you said, to eventually point to the screen and say, Will Ospreay's coming. That's it.
You know, I thought I might have liked it a little better than you. I thought it was a pretty damn good match. But it, like you said, it wasn't anything... The purpose of it was to introduce Ospreay, but I thought they all worked hard.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But.
You know, Shibata looked real good here, and Okada always works hard in these situations. So one thing that's kind of weird is do you kind of – I don't know. This might be a weird thing, but Kushida kind of went 50-50 with Sakuraba with the grappling, and a lot of guys always do, and I have a hard time with that. Now, you as not being an MMA guy
– Yeah, so I don't care. Yeah.
So it doesn't bother you.
That's your guy, though. So, no, it doesn't bother me at all. But, yeah, I get how, you know, big fans of 2000s, you know, MMA and Pride and all that sort of stuff kind of look at it. It's sort of – I get that, why people would be upset by it. For me, yeah, it does nothing for me. I don't care. Sakuraba means nothing to me whatsoever. But I get it. I do.
See, that's interesting perspective, because you didn't watch all those Sakuraba fights. You know nothing of his MMA career. And it's like I watch him grapple with these pro wrestlers, and I have a hard time buying into it. I'm not going to say it ruins the matches or anything for me. Look, I'm not in love with his matches to begin with. He's grown on me more. Look, when he first got to the company, I couldn't stand watching his matches. And especially, you know, when he had the feud with the Gracies, I didn't want nothing to do with it. I know you couldn't stand that stuff either. Now, I don't really mind his matches all that much. The thing is, I can't buy in when he's grappling with Kushida. I can't buy it.
Yeah, well, see, Kushida, he was a protege of him, though, right?
He is.
Kushida trained under him and did some stuff.
Kushida supposedly can grapple a little, but okay, one guy is a guy with a rep right. grapple a little. The other guy is one of the greatest grapplers of all time. Okay, so yeah. I still can't really buy into it. It's like, I think it works better when you have like what Bobby Fish did at New Beginning, where, you know, he thought he was hot shit, and then Sakuraba just wiped the mat with him, right? Mm-hmm. That was a lot of fun. And then Kyle O'Reilly tags in and kind of goes more 50-50 with him. Now, that kind of served a purpose. What that was telling fans was, okay, O'Reilly is the real deal. You know what I mean? Like, and we want to take this guy seriously. But when he just goes through this random grappling with certain guys, and I'm just using Kushida as the example because that was this match. I mean, but we've seen it with other guys. And it's like, I don't know. I almost feel like the pro wrestlers should do pro wrestler type things if they're going to go even with him on the mat. You know what I mean? But they just grapple with him, and I have a hard time buying into it. Maybe it's just me. Who knows?
Yeah, no, I could see it. No, there was a few other people I saw on Twitter that mentioned it as well. So you're not alone, but... To me, for the people that are just the pure wrestling fans, I'm sure nobody really cares, unless you're really passionate about that era of MMA, which I know you are and a few of the other people that were following. And of course, many people are, but I could get that. But yeah, I see for the most part, people not caring.
I mean,
but,
look at it this way. His entire gimmick in those days was he was the pro wrestler killer.
Right, right.
So it's like... It's,
but he's old. He's old and shitty now, so that's why.
He's a Gracie killer, too.
Right, he's lost his hustle. I don't know. Move
on. Thing was, he was a pro wrestler, you know, who excelled at the grappling and was representing pro wrestling, and was beating up the Gracies, you know, and then I don't know. It bothers me a little bit.
He just doesn't care anymore. That's all you gotta know. He's no good. He's washed up. He doesn't care anymore.
It's like if Josh Barnett came to New Japan and he was like going 50-50 on the mat with Okada, it wouldn't bother you? I mean, it would drive me nuts.
I don't care about MMA, so none of them bother me. I don't know. I have no feelings about. I have zero feelings about Josh Barnett whatsoever. So sorry.
From a logic standpoint.
Who the fuck's Josh Barnett? Don't care.
Is grappling with Tomohiro Ishii. I mean, shouldn't he just wipe the mat with him? You know, like,
maybe. Maybe he sucks now. Maybe he hasn't practiced in a while.
Shouldn't Ishii have to like bite him or like kick him in the face or do something pro wrestling-y to get out of it?
I mean, yeah, ideally, but I don't see that in this particular case with Kushida, because Kushida we know has a little bit of an MMA background. We know directly with Sakuraba, he's got a background, so I don't really mind it there. And with O'Reilly, I don't mind it either. I think, yeah, if there was an extreme case where, like, you know, like you said, a Tomohiro Ishii goes neck and neck with him on the ground, then yeah, then maybe you could say it. I don't know if these are great examples of that being a problem, but I see what you mean, though, about those guys. I don't care. You're asking the absolute last person in the world that gives a fuck about how MMA guys are.
Because you have a completely different perspective on it.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I don't care. I mean, Josh Barnett did it. Whatever. I mean, I don't even know what like great grappling even looks like, to be honest. So there you go. I don't know anything. I'm the worst. Move on. Goto Nagata. What'd you think of this guy? I liked it a lot.
It was a really good match, and I think it was helped by the fact that people talked me into it, man. I thought Nagata was going to win. So I think...
I did too. That's the lone blemish on my first day. I had 7 points. This is it. There's a lot of people too. A lot of people were picked Nagata winning this. It made sense. It made all the sense in the world.
Yeah. And I think that it ended up being a surprise finish when it really probably shouldn't have been. You know what I mean? But so that helped the match a little bit. I think that everything from basically the Kojima Hanma match onward was a really good match. This card it's like we said, this was like a really good G1 card. You know, from that match onward, everything was pretty good. This might have been the weakest match of the bunch, and this was a really, really good match.
I thought what was kind of interesting to me, and I did write this in the review as well, is that it lacked some of the intensity and speed of those previous ones, which is fine, though, because it worked perfectly well, especially when you got a guy like a Nagata in there. And the big thing, the big story of the match, and I'm sure you picked up on this a lot as well, is that Nagata was sort of challenging Goto throughout, sort of saying, okay, look, like you've been through all this shit or whatever. Well, here you go. I'm going to try this and see what you can do and see what you can do or whatever. And Goto, I mean, Nagata, honestly, for a lot of the match, had the advantage over Goto, and Goto looked like, hey, shit, I you know, this old man's beating me. And that's when I thought, like, because Nagata had him in a bunch of different locks and a bunch of other stuff, and I said, oh man, he's gonna lose this and just be so demoralized now. But the one part that came, I thought it was really interesting, is that Goto sort of there was a point where where Goto is challenging Nagata to kick him, I think. He's on the ground. He says, come on, kick me, or whatever. Nagata goes for the kick, and Goto stands up, grabs him, and then does, you know, a series of moves, does a backbreaker, and then, you know, gets the pinfall shortly after that. So I thought that was kind of a cool aspect. And I said, I don't know if that means that we're supposed to think, and this is fun, though. There's kind of two different angles that you can kind of go with this. Either that Goto sort of has this new edge to him where he's willing to sort of cheat and kind of be a dick, or if, you know, it's just him taking the opening where Nagata, you know, he challenged Nagata. Nagata stupidly went for a kick after a guy challenged him, and then he just showed him up and said, hey, no, that's dumb. Don't do that. Either way, I kind of like the story, whether he's got, you know, sort of an asshole tinge to him a little bit where he took that moment to sort of cheat in a sense, not cheat in the cheating, I don't know, just sort of to take a loophole there and sort of take that advantage, or if it's just him saying, hey, look, this is something that you kind of let me have, and then I took it and I won. So that's it. But I thought that was kind of an interesting sort of interplay there at the finish.
Yeah, the story was looking like it was going to be slumping Goto again.
You know, yeah, right.
Were, I think that's what
I mean. Nagata was kicking his ass for the first, you know, 10 minutes of the match. And then, like I said, there was that one point where Goto challenged Nagata to kick him, went for the kick, and then he reversed it, and that was it. And that was the closing stretch of the match.
Look, I think this is it for Nagata. I think that, I don't think you're going to see another push for him. And I think that being sort of the Triple H of Lionsgate is a good spot for him right now. Obviously he likes working with the younger wrestlers. He likes being in the dojo with some of these guys, taking some of them under his wing. And I think him is sort of the top dude that they have to prove themselves against on these Lionsgate shows that we'll talk about a little later is really a good spot for him right now. Even more so than maybe getting pushed in New Japan proper. So I know there's Nagata fan, but I kind of like where he's at right now. I kind of prefer him in this role as a guy who can go out there and give you a decent match on a New Japan show, but really be the guy that the young guys gun for on the Lionsgate shows.
Move on now to Naito defeating Yoshihashi. This, I think I will say it, is the best Yoshihashi match I've ever seen.
It's up there.
Agree or disagree?
Well, the Yoshihashi match against Elgin was really good.
Okay.
But look, I'm not going to argue with you. This was a really good Yoshihashi match. I mean, you might be right.
And I'm saying that, by the way. And you know me.
You can't stand the guy.
No. Again, not personally. He's probably a very nice man. I don't like his in-ring work. But yeah, no, that's a guy I'm never, never, never a big fan of anything that Yoshihashi does. But I thought this was awesome. I mean, the story was really cool as well where you know, it felt like Naito just had the advantage. I mean, he was beating on him, took him to the outside, threw him through the barricades, and it was a typical, what you would sort of assume Naito and Yoshihashi would be. And then, I don't know what happened, but something snapped, and then he just started going and going and going, and you know, had a number of just like super close pinfalls where you're like, oh my God, Yoshihashi might win this thing. Like, there was a point where I was legitimately like, oh my God, like, because every bracket would have been destroyed, because Naito's the big favorite for everybody. I mean, there was no chance Yoshihashi was going to win, but there's it. I mean, he was able to get me a few times in that match to go, oh my God, they might have him win. And of course, you know, it's silly, but it was. I mean, that's it. I mean,
great. It's New Japan Cup where they'll pull that shit with you.
Exactly. Yeah, and that was like me going like, oh my God, like they're really going to do that. And you know, he's got him in the Dragon Sleeper in the middle of the ring. He's, you know, hitting his finishers and stuff, and it's like, oh my God, like they're really going to have Naito lose in the first round. And then Naito pulls it out, and like they, you know, Naito even has that face too, like, oh my God, that was really close. Like, why did I let Yoshihashi get, you know, that much on me, which is great. I love that story, and it immediately makes a lot of people care about Yoshihashi, myself included, where people were going, oh my God, this guy's pretty good. Like, he can, you give him an opportunity and you give him this sort of a little bit of a carrot and he could take it. So I love that. I thought it was a fantastic match.
This was better than the Yoshihashi Hanma match, which was slightly disappointing if you remember that one. But I think it was about equal to the Mike Elgin Yoshihashi match from, I think it was the final night of the G1 where they just had a random one-off singles match. And yeah, Elgin just tore the fucking house down with the guy. I think I gave it 4 stars. This was in the 4-star range too. 3.5, 3.25, somewhere in there. What'd you have it at? You rated?
I went 3.25. I went 3.25, but I'm a bad rater too. You know.
So
I'm low.
Well, yeah, I think you went high on that damn Tama Tonga match at 2.25. But so you overrated that one. I was like, I don't know. But yeah. So yeah, you can make a really good argument. This was the best singles match Yoshihashi's ever had, and I'll tell you, this might have been, with the exception of a couple of the G1 matches where he really tore the house down, the best Naito match since the G1. because his matches have not. It's not been about match quality with that guy.
Right.
It's been about character work.
This is certainly better than any of those Shibata matches that they had, which should have been great and just ended up not being good at all. So yeah, no, that's fair. I think that's absolutely fair to say. Then we'll move on to what I think was the match of the night: Tomohiro Ishii versus Evil. What'd you think of this guy? I went 3 3/4. I could have easily gone 4. Just a shockingly good match for these two guys.
Yeah, I went 4 on this. I went 4 flat on 3 or 4 matches on the show. Did you go 4 with anything?
I didn't, because I'm a bastard like that. So
yes, I mean, yeah, but 3 3/4 and 4 is like the same thing.
Right.
But I mean, this was. Look, we just talked about maybe the best Yoshihashi singles match ever, the best Naito match since the G1. I mean, this is Evil's best match since he's...
Oh, there's no debate. There's no debate.
I mean...
I won't listen to any. No.
I saw a couple of his excursion matches that I thought were on par with this.
Yeah, I saw him and Elgin in Ring of Honor in Chicago. That was very good. Probably a little bit better than this. But no, as far as New Japan, this is it.
Yeah, and you know, look, it's like we talked about. Bushi... it's almost like he's been in that role for, it feels like he's been in that role for years. He acclimated to it so well. It might take Watanabe a little longer, and that's okay. It's still a fairly new gimmick. Okay. It's not like he's been doing it for 3 years. He's been doing it for under a year. So this is a good sign for Watanabe. I still think it's teetering on the brink of being a little bit too corny. It's right on the line. I think he really needs to get rid of the cheap ass Halloween store fucking, what do you call that weapon? Is it a, what do you call that gimmick? Carries around. I don't know the name.
I don't know my weapons.
Medieval weapons. But whatever that thing he's carrying around, the sickle, is it a sickle?
Is it a Sith or a sickle? Because there's a Sith too. I don't know what it is. Maybe a sickle. Let's call it a sickle.
Some dork will correct us, but I'm going to go with sickle.
Wow.
We're probably wrong.
You're not a dork, whoever you are. But still, seriously, we don't care. Don't tweet
Listen,
us. We don't
nobody
care.
buries their own listeners quite like we do. But I'm going to go with sickle, and I'm probably wrong, okay? But he needs to get rid of that thing.
Scythe? Is it scythe?
It might
is
be a scythe. I don't fucking know.
Yeah, it's one of those.
Look, I don't mind the rest of it. I think the purple cloak is cool. I don't even mind the laser beams, okay? But that weapon thing, it looks like a cheap piece of plastic. You can tell.
Listen to us describe this. Like, imagine if you don't know what this guy looks like or don't know anything. Like, listen to us describing this. Like, everything else that we described, and now we're talking about lasers and skites and makeup and colors purple and smoke and like... Like you gotta just be like, what the hell are these guys?
And I really
about?
Don't mind like the colored hair, the mascara, the purple cloak, the fucking skull gimmick that he wears around his neck now, the lasers. Shockingly, none of that bothers me. It's the stupid plastic weapon that you can tell weighs less than a pound just by the way he carries it around. If it was really made of metal or something, I can live with it more. Kind of like Taniguchi's Bident. Remember Taniguchi's Bident? Okay, and I know that's the name of that fucking thing. That thing's called.
We looked it up. We did an entire podcast where we looked that up. Yes, not an entire podcast, but it was
Bident.
A big part.
Okay, yeah. And I don't mind Yoshihashi's fucking staff, whatever that thing is.
That thing's stupid.
I don't mind that because at least the thing that Evil carries around, it looks like something that you have.
It's a Halloween thing. He bought it at a Halloween.
Absolutely,
store.
It looks like it's something that you have in your garage or your closet because you were the Grim Reaper for Halloween in 2003, and you just never got around to throwing the thing out. Like it's to me, you know. So it's right on the brink, this gimmick, and he hasn't crossed the line yet, but he's very fucking close to going full Bray Wyatt, and that's the danger here. But yes, this was an excellent match. Can you have a bad match with Ishii? I mean, really?
No, I think we're at that point now where he's just so
unless
good.
It's your fifth straight match with Makabe, you can't have a bad match with the guy.
Right. Yeah, other than that, we sort of got weirded out by that, or I got weirded out by that, going, oh man, maybe Ishii isn't the, you know, maybe it's finally, we had that peak with Ishii, you know, a few years ago. Him and Naito had those fantastic series of matches. Maybe that was sort of the peak here, but man, he's had just a really, really good year. I mean, him and Shibata have had some great matches, and this one, and Evil did a great job here in this as well, but this was Ishii really kind of, you could tell, sort of taking control of this match and working it in his style as well, which you could tell, because Evil you know, hasn't worked that way. He hasn't really worked the same sort of never open weight. What we know is a never open weight style, you know, the hard lariats, a lot of grunting, you know, headbutts, real hard hitting, you know, hard style. And we haven't really seen that out of him yet. And he fits in perfect. So I think he maybe has found his niche here a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see what the future holds for Evil if he's in that never open weight picture. But I think they found their niche with him. I think him against, you know, Ishii's and Shibata's and those sort of level of guys, I think is what's going to work for him.
And it'd be a fresh face for those guys, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we'll go to the main event here, which is Bad Luck Fale defeating Hiroshi Tanahashi. An upset of sorts. Not a ton of people. It was less than 50% had Fale beating Tanahashi, but it wasn't like 10%. It was like 48 or something like that. I don't have the exact number in front of me. So there was a fair amount of people that thought he was going to win here. No, it made the most sense for Fale to be the one that beat Tanahashi, because if Tanahashi did beat Fale, then, you know, he faces Mike Elgin in the next round, and that's weird. Like, you're not going to have Elgin beat Tanahashi. It's just a weird match to happen regardless. So maybe, you know, Tanahashi moves on and beats Elgin, which doesn't seem like the right time for Elgin to lose. And then he faces, you know, Goto or, you know, Tama Tonga, and then, of course, and then you got Tanahashi in the finals again. And I think it's especially for the New Japan Cup, where you can sort of open it up a little bit, I think it was the right move to get him out of this tournament. And just now we have a bunch of guys that could win this. We have Naito, looks like a favorite, but people have also went with Mike Elgin as well as a guy who could win. Some people also, you know, possibly with Kojima. I mean, there's some other guys that could win here. So I think it's good that Tanahashi gets out of here one way or another, and Fale's the best guy to do it.
Yeah, I think that the thing about it, a lot of people were saying, you know, Tanahashi wasn't going to lose two matches in a row and lose to Omega. Well, now he's lost three, and you know what? It doesn't fucking matter.
No. He's fine.
He's Hiroshi Tanahashi. It doesn't fucking matter. He can turn around now and win a big match and get right back in the mix against anybody. But it's good to get him out of there now. And as we look at the brackets, so we've got Fale against Elgin, right?
Yes. Yeah, let me fire this up.
Because it would have been Elgin Tanahashi, which, like you say, would have been a dumb match to have anyway. So
it's just weird. Yeah, they're friends. And then, like, again, it seems kind of weird. It's, like, too early for Elgin to beat a guy of, like, Tanahashi's level or whatever. But then you don't want to beat Elgin either. So it works perfect. Yeah, it's Fale Elgin now. And these take place by the time we're recording this, or by the time most of you guys are listening to this, this match might have happened already. So I don't want to say who's going to, like, do too many of our predictions or all that sort of stuff. But anyway, because we'll sound like idiots. But, yeah, it's Fale and Elgin. Then you got Tama Tonga and Hiroki Goto on that bracket. So they'll face the winners of those two will face. You got Kojima versus Toru Yano. I imagine Kojima wins that one. And you have Ishii versus Naito, which sets up a pretty interesting match there. That should be a fantastic match. And then, you know, who wins? It'll be a little fun. I think Naito's going to win. I think Kojima's going to win. Then you get a Naito-Kojima match. That would be pretty cool. We're probably going to get an Elgin versus Goto. That'll be fun too. Maybe I doubt Tama Tonga wins, right? Like, pretty much locked that Goto would win.
They're doing the next two rounds on this show, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So,
oh no, well they're doing just round two and then the semis, because that's it. Then we have that and then the semis of the 12th. So no, it's just the second round.
Oh, okay. So doing semis and finals on the
right.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, let me think. Yeah, you would think you're going to get Naito Kojima,
mm-hmm.
and then you would think you're going to get Fale. Well,
the Tonga Goto one's got me kind of. I think Elgin beats Fale.
He could, yeah. I mean, that would be another good win for Elgin. A real good win. And plus, Fale just beat his tag partner.
Right. And like I said, Fale's Teflon. Like, if he loses, it's like, all right, whatever. And then in 6 months, if he goes and beats Okada, no one, you know, it's like, all right, whatever.
Yeah. As a booking tool, Fale's a great guy because he's got the credibility to beat anyone without hurting that person. Because it's not really viewed as a huge upset. Because he has wins over Tanahashi, Okada, and Nakamura. And they've established that Bad Luck Fall as death. So when you lose, if he could beat those guys, he could beat anyone else and not hurt them either. But at the same time, he's a guy that you can beat and he doesn't get hurt. He's a great guy to have around for a booker, the way that he's been built and the way that he's been presented. You're right about that. You should really do anything with him. So yeah, Elgin may beat him, and then what do you think they do? Elgin Goto?
Yeah. I think Elgin Goto, but yeah, the Tonga Goto one I have a tough time with, because I don't know. I mean, obviously Tonga's being built up as well, but it'd be a great win for him. But I feel like it'd be weird to have Goto. If you're gonna have Goto lose, have him lose in that first round, and really have him get pissed. It doesn't make sense now. Now he's going to the semis for sure, maybe even the.
And I think that one win for Tonga says enough and is enough for him as a stepping stone. He doesn't need to win two, Winning right. one is impressive enough, especially beating Makabe. And the whole point, too, is they're just setting him up for the tag title, and beating Makabe did that. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't have to win. So you're right. Goto's going to win, and he'll probably face Elgin. But it wouldn't shock me if it was Fale. Do you think they put Goto into the finals of this thing and then break his heart there?
Yeah, that's a good – because if he's against Naito, that sort of plays into your what's it now? We're going on about 4 months now of the Goto joining the Ingobernables, so that'd be fun. If maybe he just gives up and joins them, says, fuck it, I can't do this on my own.
I'll join them.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be good.
This is also intriguing because they really can go a million different ways here.
I mean, Elgin Naito would be fun as just a pure match or whatever, and I think Naito would win that. But again, Elgin could win the whole fucking thing too, so it's really interesting.
Are Tonga and Yano the only guys who can't win the tournament?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, Ishii probably won't win either, right?
Oh, yeah, and Ishii as well, yeah. Ishii's definitely losing to Naito. So, yeah, Naito, Kojima. I'd say Naito is the highest odds. Kojima is probably the lowest odds of the guys remaining, but still has odds. Then, yeah, Goto's got some solid odds, and then Elgin, yeah, has some solid odds. So
if Kojima gets to the final against Goto, he'll probably win, because I think at that point they'll break Goto's heart there. They're not going to do Goto.
Goto's not winning this thing. No, he's won too many and had his heart broken.
And then you have to go right back to Goto Okada.
Yeah, don't do that. That'd be terrible.
But Elgin. But then if Elgin wins, who does he? He's not gonna.
He'd go IC. Maybe goes for the IC title.
But see, But then what do you do with Okada's title defense at Invasion Attack? The winner has to challenge him because they're going to have an Okada match at Invasion Attack.
Right. So, I don't know. Yeah.
So that kind of slims the field too. Look. The thing is, I personally would not do Naito Okada. I would wait for Osaka. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people have said, what if Naito wins the tournament and it would play right into his gimmick where he's like, yeah, I want my title shot, but not yet. I don't want
I'll
it
I'll do
now.
It eventually when I want
Maybe
it.
Maybe when I feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do it in Osaka. But then still, what do you do with Okada on this show?
Yeah, right.
So and I kind of feel like I would have tried to book Kota Ibushi for this show, but that's obviously not going to happen because I would have done Kota Ibushi Omega as the drawing match and then given Okada as the real drawing match and given Okada, you can give him a lesser opponent at that point, whether it's Kojima or whoever.
Yeah, you can get Kojima pretty easily. Yeah.
And even though it's the main event, everybody knows that Omega and Ibushi was the drawing match, but obviously that's out the window. That's not going to happen.
No.
So this is all, I don't know. Maybe they do go right back to Goto and he loses again and then he just has it. Then he just snaps. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Look, this is all very intriguing because it's hard to see what they're doing here. Now, they'll probably just shit on all of us and just Naito wins and faces him in Invasion Attack, which I wouldn't do. I would save it for Osaka.
I agree.
Now
It's too early, too soon.
I do think it's too soon for Naito's title shot. I think it's too soon for Naito to win because I think Naito should beat Okada. But but this is too soon for all of that, in my opinion. But this is a lot of fun because we really don't know who's going to win all these matches here coming up. Except I think it's a pretty safe bet Kojima will beat Yano.
Yeah, but it's fun though. I mean, we're looking at this thing and we got, we got scenarios for each guy, if they win and things that could happen with each guy and then like things that can't happen, Like at the same time, we have all these scenarios, but then we're like, but what about this? But what about that? And that's fun. That's awesome. Like that's how you want to book a tournament in my mind. You want people to sort of question and wonder and because now I'm intrigued. I want to see the results. It's not just like, Okada's going to win or Tanahashi's going to win or Nakamura's. In previous years, we've had a lot of that where it's been so obvious who was going to win this thing. This is a fun one. This is a wide open field. It really is. I mean, we might again like sound like idiots and Naito's just going to win here, but I mean, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. I really don't.
No. And it's fun making a case for other people.
Yeah, exactly. So now we're on the Kojima case. So if that happens, you heard it here first. So, Kota Ibushi, you did mention him a little bit. There's some rumblings about him. What have we sort of heard, or what have you personally heard about Kota Ibushi? Because he's been in the news a lot lately for various reasons. It's been the odd like underbelly of the wrestling news cycle because nobody wants to really say too much. But there's stuff going on. It sounds like speculation of stuff going on.
Yeah, well, I mean, his contract is up with New Japan, and from what I understand, he's just freelance and he can work anywhere. Even though he's going to do the DDT Sumo Hall show, like third from the top in that wacky tag match. And he claims he's going to be doing this weird offshoot promotion, whatever it is, for DDT. But there's a lot of talk that he's going to be at WrestleMania weekend, and the talk centers around Evolve. Now, people asked us to talk about it, so we did a little bit of digging. Evolve is not confirming it. We do know that there are places where he definitely won't be working, because we asked people, and no, he's not working for us that weekend. So all signs pointing to Evolve. I think that's safe to say. Evolve people are hinting around at it. But I don't think, as of this recording, anything is set in stone yet. And that, I don't think that's people dancing around it or us dancing around it. Because if Evolve had cut the deal, they would announce the matches. They're trying to sell tickets. So if it was official, I think we'd know, because Evolve would say so. But, I mean, it's all signs are pointing to Ibushi working for Evolve WrestleMania weekend. We had a couple matches thrown at us, but who the hell knows? And the other thing is, it was strongly hinted to us that he would then be in NXT by June. So, you know, we weren't told that flat out, but someone strongly hinted that. So, and like I said, there were a couple Evolve matches that were thrown at us, you know, but like I don't think it's official yet, because I think the second that any kind of, you know, ink is dry, Evolve's just gonna, WWN's gonna scream it from the rooftops.
Right.
But, you know, it's like I said, some other people who are running shows that weekend have said that he's not working for them, because he's pretty much locked up by someone, which is Evolve. I mean, it's Evolve. It's gonna be Evolve or bust.
That's what we're hearing, which should be awesome. I mean, if there's some of the matches that people have mentioned are, I really wish I would be down there. If those happen, who knows? Something could fall through again. So we don't want to say this is what's going to happen or that's what they think is going to. So, but yeah, it seems like we're pretty close there, which is really fun, really interesting. And just adds to the craziness that this year's been, this 2016, and just what it's been doing. So, yeah, but again, that's all we know for right now. And again, we don't really, I don't want to say we quote know anything, but it's been strongly, as you said, hinted about those things. And I mean, that'd be a great spot for him, at least for the meantime. And NXT, I don't know. I mean, we've been talking on Twitter a lot about it. You know, if Kota Ibushi does come in and he goes to NXT, you can't have a Tommy there anymore, can you? Like, what's the need of him?
I think you could have a Tommy. I mean, the thing is, a Tommy just starts getting lost in the shuffle, because he never stood out before he got hurt. He was just right, starting to come around.
Yeah, what's the best Hideo Itami match ever?
Yeah, I mean,
Tyler Breeze, right? That one match against Tyler Breeze. Good. Yeah, like
the Balor match at WrestleMania weekend that not a lot of people saw. You know, so it's like, yeah, the point is, he was just starting to come around when he got hurt. So he hasn't stood out. So he's just going to fall by, you know, behind all. Now look, bringing all these people in could motivate him. And then when he comes back, he can be, you know, a house of fire, and just and maybe this time away has lit a fire under him, and maybe he's had time to think about, to stop trying to be what he thinks he's supposed to be in that company and just be, you know, the guy that they signed, which was always his problem. You know, honestly, if he does leave and go back to Noah, that would be great for Noah. I think that would obviously be actually awesome for Noah. They could really use that, actually. But because that's exactly what they're lacking, and there's a bunch of matches there that I would love to see him have. But I don't even know how long he's been there. What, almost 2 years now, right?
We're trying to figure it out. Yeah, the other day I was trying to figure it out. Yeah, it's been since 2014. I think it was early. I'm trying to remember the exact. I think either the summer of 2014, because it was that July 4th show or something. It was somewhere around that time when they had Hogan go over there or whatever. But it's been, I think it's been since 2014, if I remember
That's
correctly.
Right. And Hulk Hogan symbolic.
Remember that? Hulk Hogan's raising his hand like that. Yeah, there you go. So Hulk Hogan was the face of the company at that time when they said, "Hey, here's this guy." Yeah.
It was those, like, Sumo Hall shows that WWE,
yeah, right, right.
Ran. So whenever those were, that's when they signed them. So yeah. But yeah, it's you know, with Nakamura and Ibushi, I mean, there's no rule that you can only have one Japanese guy.
It's not zero sum, but you know.
But that's how they do things, though.
Right. They only have one Mexican at the time, and I don't think they're gonna. I just have a hard time believing they're gonna carry three Japanese guys on the roster at the same time. Like, and be able to use them well either. You know what I mean? Like, maybe they can't carry them, but one of them is becoming some horrible racial stereotype. You know, they're just not going to be able to hold, handle themselves with three of them at the same time. And that's not me talking. Of course, I would be able to find something to do with those guys because they're all fucking great. But this is this company. Like, you know what I mean? They turn down guys because they turn down high flyers because they already have high flyers. You know what I mean? Like, they turn down Ricochet because we don't need you. We already have this guy that does flips. So, you know what I mean? Like, that's this company's mentality a lot of ways, even NXT to a point. So I just find it hard to believe. I just think he gets so lost in the shuffle.
Look, a lot of things are changing, especially at the NXT level. But when it comes to some of these things, when it comes to race, I'll believe it when I see it. I'll believe that they can, that they'll have three Japanese men on the roster at once, plus Asuka, when I see it.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I forgot about Asuka. Yeah, so four Japanese people on their roster. I mean, that'd be – yeah. And this is WWE we're talking about, man. I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, I believe it when I see it. Yeah, I believe it when I see it. Like, this is just a company that's never proven to me that they are good about that, just who cares? Who cares what race they are? Who cares what language they speak? I don't give a shit. They're good. We're done. We're good. We're going to go with it. Like, it's just never been them. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. It'd be great if there was, but we don't know. So that's as far as what we know about Kota Ibushi.
Hey, Voices of Wrestling fans. This is John from the KMP Show, inviting you to check out all of the lustrous sports talk.
Beaver anus.
Funny sound drops.
Game used cork.
And nearly criminal hijinks at the newly minted member of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network, the KMP Show. Join me, John Playtech, and my co-host Rich Kraich for multiple episodes every single week. We'll talk sports. Real sports. All right, maybe some fake sports too. As well as the hottest issues and takes gripping the sports world. You can check out the show as well as subscribe to the Audio Boom feed at kmpshow.com. That's kandpshow.com. The KMP Show at KMPShow.com with takes as hot as smoldering garbage. Where's that the show?
Did you want to stay in Japan or did you want, because I know there's some little Japan topics we want to talk about. We can do that maybe at the end. Do you want to go back to America and jump back to Japan? What do you want to do? We got a bunch of stuff.
What'd you think about the Lionsgate show?
I thought it was okay. I think I came in with higher expectations than I probably should have. And that's not to say I didn't enjoy it, but there was a lot of stuff that just kind of didn't really connect with me. I think Ishimori Finlay not being great when I thought it was going to be great kind of hurt me a little bit. Jay White Ogawa, I really, really enjoyed. Nakanishi Quiet Storm, you were correct. It was pretty good. I don't know about three stars, but it was good. It wasn't horrible. And then Robinson and Nakajima was, of course, really good. But the rest of it, I don't know. It didn't really connect with me on that much. And I didn't really like Nagata Kitamiya as much as I thought I was going to either. So I don't know. Maybe I just came in with a little bit too much of expectations on it. But it's not to say I thought it was a bad show, but it wasn't sort of the blow-away show that I was sort of expecting. And that's my fault for expecting that, I think.
Yeah, I think expecting a blowaway show might...
Maybe not blowaway is not the right word, but I thought it was going to be a very entertaining show, and there was a lot of... The first half of the show I thought was really bad, and that hurt me a lot.
My fear with Finlay Ishimori was realized because they just didn't get the time, and it was too early in the show, and that was my fear with that. If you put that match later in the show and they get another 3 or 4 minutes, just another 3 or 4 minutes... I think that it felt like it was on its way to being an excellent match, and then it just ended too soon. But yeah, I like the Jay White Ogawa match more than that than I like.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That was my favorite match of the entire night. I think
Ogawa was tremendous in that match. Ogawa worked that match exactly how I wanted him to work that match. He was a fucking he was a grumpy prick.
Fuck you! Why am I doing this shit?
Yes, he had this attitude.
Who the fuck
like,
are you?
Why am I on this fucking show?
And who the fuck are you? And cut your hair. This is damn Mohawk.
I've wrestled Misawa.
Right.
I've wrestled Kobashi. I've been the GHC motherfucking champion.
When was Jay White born? He was probably... That man under his belt had like Misawa matches before Jay White was
absolutely
even born.
Absolutely. He's been wrestling 30
yeah.
years. He's
yeah,
been
let's
wrestling
see here.
Longer than Jay White's been on the planet. And he's,
I just want to find out. 1992. So yeah, Ogawa had some traction before 1992. So yeah, I was main event before you were even fucking born, you little... piece of shit.
he was working the All Japan Glory days before.
So. Right, I was main event in tag matches before your fucking ass was born. So.
Yes, and that's exactly how he worked the match. like a grumpy prick who felt like he was above being in there with this fucking lowly young boy. And the best part about it was these dirty little tricks, kicking Jay White's leg out from underneath him. And then he wins it with a figure four. And the best part about that
– He doesn't let go.
He holds.
It's like a fun little event. It's like a little showcase match and a showcase event. This little fucker's just he's wrenching the figure four and I'll break your fucking leg. It's like, dude, just chill. Just calm down.
Holding it after the bell.
Just calm down, man.
Yeah, so he's just a tremendous wrestler. And then the other match that needs to be talked about at length, I think, was the Nakajima Juice Robinson match.
Juice.
Okay.
Steps up, finally.
A theme of this show, of this podcast, has been the best match of Blank's blank career, right? Well,
yeah.
This was easily the best Juice Robinson match, probably of his life, easily of his Japan run, since we've seen his entire Japan run.
Oh, God. So far and away, his best of his Japan.
Right in front of our eyes. I mean, I don't know if he's got some random indie match somewhere that might have been better than this, but I doubt it, because this was an excellent match. And I thought Nakajima really came off like a star. The night before, he beat Minoru Suzuki in what also was an excellent match. And then we watched him out of order, though, because the Noah show didn't pop up until a couple days later. And then I think the fans in Shinjuku Face really treated him like a star when he came out for this match. And this was an excellent match. And I thought Juice Robinson was every bit as good as Nakajima here, if not a little bit better. I mean, Juice Robinson was excellent in this match. This was not a Nakajima carry job by any stretch of the imagination. Juice Robinson held his own in this match.
And the connection he made to the crowd, too, was pretty fun as well. They were into him, and that's something that he had a lot of problems with when he first came here. We know he was doing his little dancing stuff, and then, like, two people would be like, okay. Like, and that's just, you know, familiarity with him, but he's built it up a little bit. He's built up some equity, and people are starting to get into him and starting to kind of like his little nuances and little quirks and all that sort of stuff. So that's good. And it's obvious that he's gaining confidence from that, too, because I'm sure when you go and do your stuff and two people kind of politely clap, you're like, ah, shit, you just sort of, you know, bob your head and sort of, okay, all right, well, whatever. Whereas now the fans are getting up for him, and it's obvious in his work as well. It's been showing that he's got a lot more confidence now.
Yeah, so I think that you know, the fans were great on this show because they treated all of these young guys well. Even in the opener with Hanjo's debut, they were chanting Hanjo, Hanjo. So they understood the concept of the show. They were behind all of the young guys, and I think that helped a lot. I mean, you were right. Some of the early matches weren't anything special, but these are all, there's a lot of young kids working these shows. You can expect that.
There's 17 and 18 year olds working here.
There is an 18 year old working this show, and there's some people that work this show who had under five matches in their life coming into this thing, including an exhibition match, which opened up the show with Nagata as the referee. So I wasn't expecting them to show us that, but that was our first look at Oka, who everyone thinks, you know, is going to be a surefire superstar. Way too early to judge anything that happens here. I mean, they just went out there in amateur wrestling singlets and did some, you know, and shot on each other and did some – not shot on each other. What I mean by that is, like,
they rolled. They did some rolling.
Yes, it wasn't a shoot fight. They literally shot on each other, like, as people know what I'm talking about. So
the guy slaps them and just gets them upset and go fight.
They were shooting and sprawling is what I meant to say. Yeah, right. So I think people kind of got it. But yeah, so there's a lot of young and inexperienced.
I like the idea of Oka just going out there bare fists, just fucking this guy up.
Yeah, right. It actually might have been very interesting if that was the game. But I mean, yeah, so Hanjo's debut, look, he looked like a guy making a debut, right? I mean, against Taniguchi. That's no easy task, making your debut against Taniguchi. But I thought Taniguchi played it right, too. You know, he kind of didn't sell too much for him. I think Hanjo got off that one lariat, and that was it. But the fans were behind him. He looked very awkward with his footing and everything. But look, that's what these shows are going to be. You're going to see rookies. You're going to see really young guys who are underdeveloped. And I'm going to be into these things. You know, even if they're not great shows, and this one I thought was a good show. I liked it a little bit better than you, so I thought there was a lot to sink your teeth into later in the show. And I just like watching young wrestlers develop. I'm into that. You know, even when there's shitty episodes of NXT with young guys that aren't very good, and girls when it comes to NXT, I like watching that stuff. I don't know. I'm into it. But yeah, I enjoyed the show. I like Nagata sort of in this Triple H role. And I think the Juice Robinson Nakajima match is well worth going out of your way to see. So is the Jay White Ogawa match. I would tell people, if you have New Japan World and you didn't watch this show, those two matches to me are – I would go as far as to say those are must-watch matches. Would you go that far?
No, you got to go out of your way to watch those. I mean, they're super easy to watch, super quick. You'd be silly not to watch it. If you have New Japan World, what are you doing? I mean, of course,
if you have
definitely
Japan
go watch
World,
those.
You're going to be the type of person who would really dig those two matches.
Right. I mean, it's 20 minutes of your life. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and both those are very compact. You know, you can easily get through it. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, and I mean, I thought you liked the Jay White Ogawa best. I liked the Nakajima Robinson. I thought that was like a 3.5-star match. I thought it was a really good match. But yeah, and watch the Hanjo debut too. It's a debut. Get in on the ground floor, the guy. You know, you might as well. But yeah. So anyway, this podcast has been an absolute disaster. I'm sure that most of the people listening, savvy listeners, have heard some awful jump cuts and some changes in sound quality. Rich, I think we've had some disasters before. This might be the worst recording experience we've ever had.
Yeah, this is what we're close to. I think 7 disconnects is what I've counted right now, looking at my files of just, yeah. So we're going to explore new recording options other than Skype, because Skype is dead to me now. So, because this has just been horrendous. I check my connection. You reset your router. I reset mine. I've done stuff. You've done stuff. I have nothing open. We're just oil and water today on Skype. I don't know. We just disconnect out of nowhere. It's been like literally every half hour too. So it's just it's driving me nuts.
Like every 15, 20 minutes it disconnects. Then we got to get the.
Oh yeah, sorry. Here we go. 15, 18, 30, 30, 10. Okay. So, yeah. So we're
averaging internet. About every 15 minutes, and we had a couple more topics. We were gonna do Roadblock. But look, we can't do it. We're frustrated. It keeps disconnecting. So I think we're going to throw in the towel. And you're
going to get an
abbreviated show here, because it's going to take Rich about an hour just to piece this thing together. So,
well, we'll catch it up with you. We have we had some other stuff. We're going to talk Roblox. We're going to talk Ring of Honor 14th anniversary, and then sort of talk about Ring of Honor in general. That's timeless. We can do that anytime. Roblox probably will not. When does Roblox happen? Oh, we'll be able to preview it next week. So we got Roblox. We can still preview. So, yeah, sorry about that. I mean, it's just like at this point, it's going to disaster. It's just our flow's off. You know, we're picking stuff up. We're picking up conversations that we had, 5 minutes ago and trying to piece it together. It's not going to work.
Hopefully, nobody has noticed, and this all sounds like we're bullshit, because then that means Rich has done a tremendous job putting it back together. But this has been the most frustrating recording experience ever. This last disconnect happened, and I was like, look, we got to throw in the towel.
Right. It's a Frankenstein show right now, so I apologize. But we'll see what we can do. But yeah, I got nothing here, so I'm gonna unfortunately have to bid you adieu, and we'll make it up to you guys.
And if you want to fill in the time, go check out the debut edition of Lanza Unfiltered, which is getting rave reviews from everywhere. So give that a shot. It's not wrestling, though, be warned. But I think you'll figure that out in the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you got yours. I got, if you don't want to stay away from wrestling for a little bit, I got the K&P show. Me and John play tech, talking sports. We got the Pearlcast up right now, or by the time most of you guys listen to this, interview with Kevin Kelly. Yes, they got an interview with Kevin Kelly. He got shouted out on the ROH 14th anniversary show as well. So they got those guys. Shake Them Ropes was this week as well. A bunch of other stuff going on. So there's plenty of auto content to make up for our terrible, terrible Skype connections here. So,
and you see how quickly we're talking, because we know it's about to drop.
Look, I'm looking. I'm waiting. Because if it drops, I don't know what I'm going to do, because I'm not going to record something else. So it's just going to be
up,
so
Rich.
Weird.
Wrap it up.
So I'll wrap it up, and we're gone, and we apologize, and we're sorry. So don't get mad at us. But anyway, for Joe Lanza, I'm Rich Craich, and we'll see you next time on the Voice of Wrestling podcast. And hopefully it'll be better. So bye.
Motorist Insurance Group and Brick Street Insurance have come together to create a better one-stop shop for agents and policyholders, encircling you with coverage at every step in life's journey. We are now Encova Insurance.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.